Translation: as long as Yamaraj, who causes everyone's death, is present here, no one shall meet with death. The great sages have invited the controller of death, Yamaraj, who is a representative of the Lord. Living beings who are under his grip should take advantage by hearing the deathless nectar in the form of this narration of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Every human being dislikes meeting death, but he does not know how to get rid of death. The surest remedy for avoiding death is to accustom oneself to hearing the nectarian pastimes of the Lord as they are systematically narrated in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam. It is advised herein, therefore, that any human being who desires freedom from death should take to this course of life as recommended by the rishis headed by Shaunaka. Om Ajnanata Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So first of all, before I start, I'd like to seek the blessings of all the exalted Vaishnavas assembled here today, in this room, on the internet, in the past, present, future, especially the Vaishnavas in this room, Gaur Krishna Prabhu, Srinivas Prabhu, Prayojana Prabhu, Jagat Priya Mataji, all of you, if you can give me some blessings, then I'll try and speak something, thank you, useful, make my human form of life a little bit useful. So I was just thinking about giving class, that sometimes, you know, I get a bit proud, I'm giving class. But then I realized that it's nothing special. It's just like any other service. Like, you'd clean the temple building is a service. When they ask you to clean the temple, you clean the temple. Then you do deity worship when they ask you. When they ask you, make garlands, pick flowers, go on book distribution. And when they ask you, you give class. It's not a big deal. So it helps me stay more leveled, that I'm only here to share what Krishna has spoken, what Srila Prabhupada has written in his books, and some realizations that I've had along the journey to share it with all of you. And anyone can do that. It's not a big deal. So this is just for my own purification. Hare Krishna. So it's a very interesting topic we're speaking today about death. And I'm sure you've all heard of death, especially in the current times, but also in the bygone times, and death is a very interesting topic that's always been discussed everywhere. In fact, since time immemorial, whether you're religion, whether you're part of a religion or not, or you're a scientist or an atheist, death is the most important and most famous topic that everybody discusses. Like, even if you look at all the documentaries available out there, all the research that has been done, everything, the crux of the matter is, if you can figure out what death is, that's what is the inquisitiveness of man. And it has been since time immemorial, since the cavemen, if you believe in cavemen and evolution, or the, you know, the Australopithecus or the Homo sapiens now, everybody, the crux of the matter is death. Even for an animal, the biggest fear is death. It's all about death. And then when it comes to religion, if you can answer the question, what happens at death and what happens after, then people are more interested. Even the scientists are trying to figure out what happens at the time of death. What is actually death? At what time does death happen? What happens after? So this is a very big topic now, which is a mystery to a lot of people, but not to the devotees, because they know exactly what death is, how it happens, and what happens afterwards. It's interesting, like here Shaunaka Rishi is speaking to Suta Goswami, and he's explaining how Yamaraj is present in the assembly because we're discussing pastimes of the Lord. So when Yamaraj is right there, because Yamaraj is a pure devotee, he's one of the 12 Mahajans. So Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, is present in the assembly hearing the pastimes of the Lord, which means he's kind of, you know, he's spacing out in his duty. He's absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So there's no need to fear death here because Yamaraj is present. So the idea that's explained is that wherever the pastimes of the Lord are chanted, wherever his glories are chanted, Yamaraj is there. So many devotees come, it's said the exalted demigods come where the pure chanting happens. Narada Muni comes. Prabhupada in many occasions also explained how Narada Muni was present when he was speaking. And here it is explained how Yamaraj comes as well. So there's no need to fear death. And even though death is a big fear for a lot of people who don't have Krishna in their life, for the devotees, death is just another thing. For everybody else, death is like, you know, game over. But for the devotees, death is like a level up. You move on to the next level. Okay, you're moving on, you've done your devotional service, you're happy, and now you're moving on to the next stage. So that is death for a devotee. So I thought we'll speak about a few things, understand death a bit more, and speak about what Krishna explains and what we should do, because we have limited time left. So don't expect something exciting. It's the same old thing that has been spoken over generations, and I'm going to be like an evangelist today, shouting at you all, but only because it's my service. Reminded me of a Prabhupada story when Prabhupada was once in Calcutta in the year 1942 or 43, in December, in the middle of the Second World War. And the Japanese bombed Calcutta because it was a very important base for the British, and Britain was very much involved in the Second World War. And Britain used a lot of soldiers that were from India as well. So a lot of Indian soldiers used to fight for the British. And in fact, a big chunk of the British army was made of Indian soldiers. And the Japanese knew that that was an important base, so they bombed Calcutta in 1942. So Prabhupada explains that it was like an emergency zone, and any time the sirens would go off, there was blackout everywhere. And a lot of people knew that Calcutta would be bombed, so they'd already left. And it was like ghost town. But he said many businessmen, people who couldn't actually leave because of the business or whatever reason, did actually stay in Calcutta. So Prabhupada was there as well because he had a business there at that time. And he said, one day I was eating kachoris, and he goes, the sirens went off, and then Calcutta was being bombed. And Prabhupada writes, he says he could hear the bombing all around him. Imagine that. You're sitting down eating kachoris, and he could hear the bombing all around you. And Prabhupada says, I was thinking this is another form of Krishna. So a devotee sees Krishna everywhere. But he says, but this form is not a very lovable form. So the thing is, in life you get a choice. Somehow or the other, you have to accept Krishna. It's not whether you want to accept Krishna, or you don't want to accept Krishna. It's just a matter of how. Whether you accept Krishna in a lovable form, while you're around Krishna as a cowherd boy and devotional service, or you accept Krishna in a not so lovable form at the time of death. But ultimately, in a lifetime, everybody comes face to face with Krishna in one form or another. So Prabhupada said, it was Krishna anyway, so I carried on eating the kachoris. Prabhupada loved kachoris very much. When Prabhupada was in Malaysia, he stayed in the house of an Indian gentleman who was a life member. And his wife was from Mathura. So at that time, Prabhupada's personal servant was Sudama Prabhu, and he explains the story. He says, his wife was from Mathura, so she was a very expert cook. And Prabhupada lived in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is in Mathura, so he used to love the prasadam there and the cuisine and the Vrajvasis cooking. So she used to cook just like the Vrajvasis. And then he was served, all his disciples were there, and when he was served a nice healthy plate, they saw that, okay, Prabhupada served nicely, so let us go and let him eat in peace. So as soon as they all went down, Prabhupada's bell rang. Okay, bell ringing means the servant runs up. So Sudama Prabhu ran upstairs and said, Prabhupada, what happened? He goes, call everybody. So everybody is like, okay, something's wrong here. You know, we've done something, some offense we don't know about. We've done it in our foolishness. What's happening? So all the disciples came up and they were all surrounding Prabhupada. And Prabhupada picked up this kachori, which was shaped like a flying saucer. I don't know if you've been to Vrindavan and had kachoris there. They're like a UFO shape, big kachori. So he held it up and he said, this is how, you see this? He said, this is how kachori should be. And then he took a bite. And then everybody was still confused, what's going on? And then he gave a kachori out. He goes, you take a bite, you take a bite. And then he gave it out to everybody. And then he said, now you all of you go and you learn how to make this kachori from that lady. She's an amazing cook. So then everybody went into the kitchen. And then when he went, Prabhupada turned to Sudama Prabhu and said, he goes, you know, I only want to go back to Godhead so that I can eat laddus and kachoris with Krishna. He goes, that's my purpose. I want to go back to Godhead so I can eat kachoris with Krishna. So for a devotee, death is not a problem. For everybody else, death is a problem. But for a devotee, death is not a problem. It's like an upgrade, level up. Okay, this is great. I'm looking forward to it so that I can go and spend some time with Krishna after this. So sometimes devotees look forward to death. But the good thing, the thing is, if you want to look forward to death and going back to Krishna, then you want to make sure that whatever you've done in this lifetime is going to take you there. Okay? So we have to, now you can't really tell if your endeavor is sufficient or not to take you back to Godhead, but as long as you tried your best, okay, as long as you tried your best, it's all you can do. And the rest is up to Krishna. Let Krishna decide whether after you die, you go back to Godhead, or you stay here and preach, or you stay here and do whatever he needs you to do. But that's Krishna's decision. That's not your problem. You don't need to worry about that. What you need to worry about is, am I doing the best I can while I'm here? Okay? And not have fear of death, but look forward to it, understanding that Krishna loves everybody, especially Krishna loves the devotees, and that he will make the best decision, the decision that is best for us. So in every situation in life, we should allow Krishna to make this decision for us. In the Padyavali, Rupa Goswami writes an amazing prayer. He writes, Paramakaruniko na bhavat paraha, paramasochyatamo na chamat paraha, iti vichintya hari mai pamare yad uchitam yadunatha tadachara. So he's saying, Paramakaruniko na bhavat para. He says, Krishna, nobody is more merciful than you. You are the most merciful person I know. And paramasochyatamo na bhavat paraha. No one is more pathetic and miserable and useless than me. So that's the prayer. You're most merciful, I'm the most useless. So I don't know what's good for me. So he says, Krishna, you consider the situation and you do to me what you think is best. What you think is appropriate, you decide and you do to me. So prayer should be made like this, because sometimes we ask Krishna for things and Krishna will say that, no, that's not good. No, that's not the best for you. But eventually, if we pray too much, because Krishna is our friend, he'll give it to us. But it may not be good for us. Just like we thought that it'll be good for us to come to the material world and have a bit of fun. And Krishna says, no. Prabhupada gives the example of how there is a boy who wants to go somewhere. And the father says, no, no, don't go. It's not good for you. But then because the son insists so much, then the father says, okay, go. So just like that, we have to be very careful what kind of things we ask from Krishna, because we may think it's good for us, we may think it's best for us, but we're not seeing the big picture. But Krishna can see the big picture, so it's best to let him make the decision that you're the most merciful, you decide what's best for me. Now generally, most people in this lifetime, they go through three phases. Okay? Now, everybody, pretty much everybody, as it is explained by Maharaj Yudhishthir in the Mahabharata, he explains that everybody thinks and lives their life as if they're never going to die. Okay, pretty much. It's very interesting, because now in this situation where this pandemic is around, if you think about it, in the initial days, everybody was very fearful. Okay, this pandemic, we need to be locked in, we need to be very careful. But as time goes on, we become sort of desensitized to it a little bit. I see, like, once before we were getting married, we went into isolation and we had to go out and buy a few things, and we went into Watford. And this was like meant to be the middle of the lockdown in July. And everybody's hanging around as normal. Like, you know, there's groups of kids as before. Nobody's wearing a mask on the street. People are hugging each other. Kids having fun with each other. And it's just like in the middle of the pandemic, but everyone's just behaving as normal. And I think it's been very difficult for Sutapa Prabhu and Jagat Priya Mataji and the leaders of the temple to also, like, manage the situation here, because in the beginning everybody was, yeah, okay, be more careful, but now everybody's just chilling out, doing what they want. So I do appreciate their efforts in trying to manage everything, and Sankeet and Priya Prabhu as well, who's on everybody's case. But things like this happen, we become desensitized to it. Even when we see that somebody who's close to us leaves the body and goes away, we're kind of sad about it for a few minutes. Sometimes we're even there at the funeral. People are crying because they're losing that person. But in the midst of all that, you never think that, hang on, one day I'm going to be in this position. So we had to be very, very careful. One interesting story I remember, there was one businessman, and he was, Prabhupada says his story actually in a morning walk. And this businessman was very materialistic. And he was in his business of, you know, he had a business of steel, you know, doing steel and stuff like that. And his wife was very concerned about him, that he's so materialistic, he doesn't want to get into any spiritual stuff. So he tells his sadhu, can you knock some sense into him? You know, this guy, he doesn't get anything about spiritual life. So he says, okay, I'll try. So he takes him with him. He says, you come with me for a few months. I'll take you to some holy places, see if he can knock some sense into him. And takes him to all these holy places. So he goes around. Eventually he comes back after a few days and he goes, no improvement. This guy's hopeless. I give up. Because he's so much engaged in his materialistic business that I can't help. And his wife says, no, 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 please try, please try. One more time, please give him one more chance. So he says, okay, I'll try one last time. And then he has an idea. He said, okay, I'll take him to Varanasi. And in Varanasi, it's a special place where they have open fires, okay, like open funerals, not open fires. Open funerals, like you know, the body's there, they put the wood, set the wood on fire, you can see the body burning, doesn't smell very nice either. And you can watch, it's happening all along the riverbank because it's said to be a very holy place to get cremated. So he said, I'll take him there. I've seen a few. Sometimes, you know, it's not a very nice thing to look at. Sometimes if you're a rich person, you know, then you kind of make all arrangements and everything's done nicely. If you don't have enough money, you sometimes don't even have enough money to buy wood. And, you know, sometimes the wood runs out like halfway through the body being burnt. And anyway, I'm not going to describe it. So he takes him there, and this businessman's there looking at the body burning. And the sadhu's looking at him thinking, let's see if there is any change. And he's staring, and eventually, after like 5 minutes of watching, there's like a tear that comes through his eye. And so the sadhu goes, that's it, I got him. Finally, he's thinking about death and he's thinking about spiritual life, finally. So he asks him, like, can you please tell me what's going on in your mind? What are you thinking? He goes, I wasted my life. And Sadhu goes, yes. He goes, I wasted my life, all my life I've been doing this business in steel. Sadhu goes, yes, what more? He goes, if only I'd invested in wood. So sometimes people are so engrossed in materialistic things, they can't think about spiritual life at all. And even sometimes amongst devotees, I mean, we know that death's coming, okay. But still, how much of an endeavor are we making to be more robust and be more active in Krishna consciousness. So that's an important and interesting thing to look at. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the verse, Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritano arjuna. And he explains four types of people that come to him. Artho, jigyasur, arthati, and jnani. So artho is one who is distressed. Then the jigyasur. Jigyasu means one who is curious, one who is inquisitive. Arthati means one who wants something in exchange for devotional service. And jnani is somebody who is seeking knowledge of the absolute truth. Now if you look at present day, there's very few people who are actually saying, yeah, I want to come to Krishna, I want to find out what the absolute truth is. Very few. Arthati, asking for something in exchange, a few more, but not so many, because that used to happen in Vedic times, used to do sacrifices, ask for something in return. Nowadays, people don't really go to God if they want something. They, you know, try other means in Kali Yuga. Jigyasur, someone who is curious, inquisitive, not so much. I would say at least even 90% of people come to Krishna because they're distressed, or come to any form of religion or Krishna consciousness, or have a spiritual awakening. Where they go from there is another story. Some people just end up with crystals, or like, you know, psychics or whatever. Or sometimes people go to Buddhism, because you can have a religion without worrying about God. So you can even go for Buddhism. Best of both worlds. You can have religion, you can have the comfort of a spiritual practice, but not worrying about what God's going to do to you after death. Or you can come to Krishna consciousness and other things like that. So whatever, the point is that only when something goes wrong in our life, we start slowly seeing that, hang on, this death thing might just be real. Okay? So sometimes people may ask the question, well, if Krishna is so merciful, why is there disease? Why is there old age? You know, he could have just given us like a good life. No disease, no old age. Then we can just enjoy. If Krishna is really merciful, then that's what he should do. But the point is, it is Krishna's mercy that you have disease, old age, and misery, because only when you get these things, you kind of make an endeavor to go towards Krishna. Shri Radha Gokulananda, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, Gornitai Ki. So only when we go through these problems in life, old age, disease, we realize that death is real. Okay? Especially when you see people who, you know, in the beginning days of your life, while you're growing up, in your teenage years, there's a lot of mode of passion and ignorance. There's a lot of that as you're growing up. But when you go old, to some extent, you kind of develop some mode of goodness. The passion dies down a little bit sometimes. Or at least they have some mode of goodness. They're not rushing around so much. They like a bit of peace. Instead of going to a club, they would like to go to a park or something. You know, some mode of goodness is there. And it becomes conducive to developing spiritual life. It doesn't always work in modern day. There's so many other distractions that modern day has introduced. You can go fishing, you know, which is also a mode of goodness in one sense. Like you're just sitting down and you're just standing there with your rod like that for like 4 hours before you catch a fish. Or you can play chess, mode of goodness. This is what people who are a bit older do. So there's mode of goodness ways to waste your time as well. But the point is, the whole reason old age is there is because it's a wake-up call from Krishna saying, hang on, wake up, don't worry about all these other things now. You're going through problems in life, which means death is real, it's coming soon. So start preparing. Disease is also, it's like a little reminder as well, like a little siren going off in the war. Like, hang on, wake up, this is real. Start working on it. All these different emergencies that come in the world, whether it's a pandemic or whether it's you know, war or whatever, is again Krishna's wake-up call saying, hang on guys, wake up! From Bhagavatam class at least. Wake up, and then, you know, death is real. So I think towards the end, people do start realizing that death is real, towards the end of their life. And you know what's the next stage that comes in? Step number two. When you get closer to death, you know what happens? The number one thing that everybody gets? Fear, yeah. Fear's there. But funny enough, somehow we managed to eradicate that fear as well with our modern philosophy of, oh, who cares, whatever, one life, you know, when you die, you're dead. So some people, I have seen people who don't have any religion, who are not so afraid of death as well. They're kind of there. But one thing that everybody, pretty much everybody gets, is regret. there's a famous survey that was done by a lady called, Australian nurse called Bronnie Ware. And she spent decades nursing people in a nursing home. And she saw thousands of people die around her. And she wrote a book and she compiled things about what regrets people have before dying. And you know what? Out of all the thousands of people she interviewed and spoke to for like decades, everybody has the same regrets. It's the same thing. Okay? Over and over again, same thing. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I lived a life true to myself. I wish I had allowed myself to be happy and spent more time on myself trying to figure out in life what really mattered. It's the same thing. Like thousands of people all over the world are dying, living the same kind of life, like forgetting about death, just living the same kind of life. And while dying, they're all having the same regrets, and then everyone's dying in the same way. So it's the same thing happening over and over again with every single person, and still nobody ever learns. Okay? So the point I'm trying to make is that everybody dies, but not everybody lives. Okay? And Prabhupada often gave the example of what is the point of breathing like bellows? Okay, like a bellows of a blacksmith also breathe. Those verses are there in the Bhagavatam. You can live for thousands and thousands of years. What's the point of prolonging your life when your life is worthless? Like there's all these pine trees in California. You know how long they live for? 5,000 years. Okay, then there's the shark. There's a specific type of shark. Greenland shark lives for 500 years. Okay, tortoises live for like 300 years. Okay, some humans even nowadays, due to development of medicine and, you know, healthy lifestyles, so to say, are living up to 100 years. But the point that is made in the Bhagavatam is that, well, what's the point of your living? Okay, so here are a few verses from Canto 2, Chapter 3, where some amazing things are mentioned, just like 3-4 verses, so listen carefully. It's explained both by rising and setting. The sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all good personality of Godhead. So the only good use of your time is if you're discussing topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then it asks the question, do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? So basically it's saying everybody's doing the same thing. What are you doing that's different as a human? One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and marvelous acts of the personality of Godhead and has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord is considered to possess ear holes like holes of a snake and tongue like the tongue of a frog. Okay, so what is the point of these kind of things? If you look at history, like so many acharyas, so many devotees have written so many songs glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And all these songs, they're like the essence. They're very, very important because sometimes we like to read philosophy and we like to read pastimes. But these songs are very, very important because they represent the deepest ecstasies of these acharyas. They've practiced Krishna consciousness for a lifetime. They've achieved that state of transcendence. And what's the feeling? What does a devotee feel like when he's engaged in full Krishna consciousness? We don't know until we get to that stage. But by listening to all these songs of the acharyas, we can understand. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, so many devotees have written so many poetries and songs. One of the famous acharyas in our line, he's not really on the acharya list that's there. He was a disciple of Vyasatirtha. Vyasatirtha is there in our line. He was before Madhavendra Puri. So his disciple was a devotee called Purandara Das. So Purandara Das, and you may know him by what happened before and after him. He was the guru of Swami Haridas. Haridas, not Haridas Thakur, but Haridas who found the Bhakya Bihari deity, which is in Vrindavan. And Haridas was also the guru of Tansen, who was a musician in Akbar's court. So his guru was Purandara Das, and Purandara Das, he wrote all these songs describing the glories of the Lord. You know how many songs he wrote? Take a guess. How many songs did Purandara Das write? What's the closest guess you can get? 200? 12,000? 500? He wrote 480,000 songs. That's a lot of songs. And you know how many he wanted to write? He wanted to get to 500,000, but he couldn't finish it. He left his body. So he asked his disciple Haridas to write. So Haridas wrote 20,000 songs and got it to 500,000. 480,000 songs. Okay? That's a lot of songs. So the point being made here is that one should devote one's time to hearing the glories of the Lord and spending time in understanding the glories of the Lord. I'm only halfway through my notes. I'm getting tired. I'm going to try and wrap it up. It's too much talking. You know, I like to talk. I can speak for 6 hours, but my throat doesn't allow. So the glories of the glory of Kali Yuga is that there are so many problems, so many issues in Kali Yuga. But the one good thing is that by chanting the glories of the Lord, one can achieve all perfection in Kali Yuga. Again, there is a verse by one of the devotees who is quoted by Rupa Goswami. His name is Kaviratna. He writes a verse. It goes, Aho aho bir nakaler viduyate sudha sudhara madhuram pade pade dine dine chandana chandra shitalam yasho yashoda tanayasya giyate. So he's saying, there is one person who is not troubled by the torrents of Kali Yuga. So in Kali Yuga, there are so many problems, okay? But one person is not troubled by the torrents of Kali Yuga, okay? And for this person, even the problems of Kali Yuga not just don't exist, but every step is a torrential flood of the sweetest nectar, okay? Dhara means like a stream. Sudhara means a big flood. And sudha sudhara madhuram pade pade. So it's saying at every step, he experiences a torrential flood of the sweetness of Krishna, okay? And who is this person? One who sings the glories daily of the son of Yashoda. Yasho Yashoda tanayasya giyate. One who daily sings the glories of Yashoda's son, which are as cooling as sandalwood and camphor, is not troubled by the days of Kali Yuga. For him, every step is a torrential flood of the sweetest nectar. So Kali Yuga has lots of problems. Everything's really going wrong. Everyone's going to die. Everyone's having problems. It's really a miserable place. No need to hang around here. But the good thing is you don't have to tolerate it. But in fact, you can actually experience the real glories of the sweetness of chanting Krishna's names and his pastimes if you absorb in glorifying Krishna. So, one last tip as we finish. Skip half my notes. But one good thing I can tell you is generally we should plan our Krishna consciousness as well. We have to make sure that we don't become complacent in Krishna consciousness and just hang around. Okay? There is a possibility that a lot of us actually do this. We've come to Krishna consciousness, and once you're in Krishna consciousness, you become complacent, and then you hang around in Krishna consciousness. What I mean by hang around is that you do the basics, you chant your 16 rounds, okay? Or you finish your 16 rounds. There's a difference between chanting your rounds and finishing your rounds. Like Prabhupada, you know, once he was mocking the devotees, and he finished his rounds, and he threw his beads on the table and goes, now I can do any damn thing I want. So this is what people do. It's a big stress for devotees, like finishing the rounds. So you finish your rounds first, get it out of the way, and then you can do whatever you want. You know, we somehow chant the 16 rounds, do the bare minimum, but rest of the time is mine. Now I can do whatever I want. And people hang around in Krishna consciousness for years and years and decades. And, you know, you can do the bare minimum and hang around. But the point is, you want to actively pursue Krishna consciousness. Mother Kulangana also always used to quote a statement that Prabhupada said. Very interesting. Prabhupada said, one who doesn't come to Krishna consciousness, one who cannot accept Krishna consciousness is very unfortunate. He said, and one who accepts Krishna consciousness is very fortunate. He goes, but one who accepts Krishna consciousness but does not take advantage of it is the most unfortunate. So the point is, we have to be actively engaged in Krishna consciousness. At every step, we have to be thinking, how can we make the most while we're here? We have this amazing opportunity. We have to try and make the most. We have to be actively engaged, cultivate good relationship, develop good character, which is a sign of how much you're advancing. Develop good character. If one is really advanced, then his nature and character really develop according to the list that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita of a saintly person. So we should try and develop these qualities, develop good relationships with people, and really try and share Krishna consciousness with others. Really be active and not just hang around in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people say, what would you do if you had 24 hours to live? It's a very famous question that everybody asks. There has been research that's done out there. Everybody's been researching what's the best mentality to live in. And I think it's a very good thing, so we can use it. Anything that people come up with that we can utilize in Krishna consciousness is good. And it's said that if you're in this mentality, it's very difficult to sustain this mentality. What would I do if I had 24 hours to live? Because you're in emergency mode all the time. The body can't stay in emergency mode all the time. What would happen if I die tomorrow? Of course it's true, you could die any time. Hopefully you won't. But the point is, you can't sustain your life in emergency mode all the time. If you ask the question, you know, there's lots of surveys done even by devotees, what would you do if you had 24 hours to live? The answer is usually gratification and partying. That's what it is, because you only got 24 hours, you can't really do much. What you can do is you can just really squeeze out as much fun as you can. So I want to go partying, I want to go, you know, do the thing that I always wanted to do, go bungee jumping, whatever. These are answers people give. You ask a devotee, they'll say, I want to just sit and read the Bhagavatam, or I want to go on one last day of book distribution for preachers, I don't know. It's things like that. But if you really want to plan something, then the way you plan things is you think, what would I do if I had 1 year to live from now? Okay? Because then what you can do is it's more realistic. You're not in emergency mode. You can really, 1 year is a short time, but it's still a long enough time that you're able to plan things and really focus on Krishna consciousness. You can say, right, I'm going to read the Bhagavatam every day. I want to finish the Bhagavatam. I want to try and start a Sangha and preach Krishna consciousness. I want to plan things. I want to write this book. I want to do these many courses. I want to teach people. I want to train people. I want to go to India and spend some time there. What would I do if I had 1 year to live? Because you can still be in active mode, but you can still plan things and move ahead in that direction. So what I urge you to do today is think about it. Take your pen and paper out. Think, what am I going to do if I had 1 year to live? What things would I do? And while we have this amazing opportunity of the human form of life and the very rare opportunity of taking up Krishna consciousness, let's not waste it and hang around in Krishna consciousness. Let's make the most of it, plan things, and actively try and cultivate good character, share Krishna consciousness, and go back to Godhead and eat kachoris with Krishna. Thank you very much. Sorry for my evangelist sort of approach to this class. I had nothing else to say. If there are any questions, maybe shall we take questions? It's 8:35. You know. Say one or two questions. Arun Prabhu, would you pass on the mic, please? Don't ask me difficult questions, Prabhu.
Harishabhu, thank you for the class. Very nice class. Just yesterday I was reading a book. It's not as per the KC, but it mentioned about, it's on psychology and stuff. So it mentioned how guilt is part of like human existence, you know, because
guilt.
Because when person is, I'm talking about like a normal person outside, not in KC. When he's living his life, so many possibilities of development comes in his life, but he's not able to like fulfill all the responsibilities, right? Because you have limited energy and time, and you can only develop one aspect of your life, your personality. So similarly, I think as in devotee's life also, you get so many possibilities. For example, you can focus towards being a good Kirtaniya. You can focus towards giving a good class, learning philosophy. You can be a pujari. But then this, I was thinking whether the same principle of guilt applies to devotee's life also, because as human beings, we have our limitations, you know. We can only develop certain aspects, because anything which requires development needs focus and like sustained effort. So what's your opinion on this?
Well, on guilt?
The limitation of our energy and our time to kind of like just focus on one particular aspect.
Yeah, I think it's natural to get distracted depending on which mode of nature you're operating in. You may have more determination to do things more actively, or you may have less determination. Kali Yuga also has so many distractions. There are also problems in life. Everybody has different problems. So all these things are going to be there. Guilt will also always be there. But I think what our focus is, that as long as we plan things properly and actively try our best, okay, what we want to avoid is the same thing that everybody's going through. At the end of their life, everybody has the same regrets. Okay, that I didn't do this. Because they don't have a goal. That's the point we want to avoid. When you're about to leave your body, you don't want to look back and think, oh my God, you know, I spent 5 years in the temple, but what did I do? I spent 40 years in Krishna consciousness. I should have done this, I should have done that. Before leaving your body, you want to think like, yes, I've done my best for Krishna, I've tried to preach. You may not have achieved much in terms of like quantifying it. Okay, it's good if you can quantify it. But you may not be able to say that, okay, I made 200 devotees there, I opened one center there, I read this book, Bhagavatam, 4 times. You may not be able to quantify it. But as long as on your deathbed, you're sitting there thinking, you know what, I gave it my best shot. I tried my best for Krishna. I didn't space out. Okay, I spaced out a little bit, that's fine. But I didn't space out so much. And I feel like I planned things and I actually engaged myself in Krishna consciousness, and I'm happy with that. So if you can say that, then that's good enough for us. I don't think we can avoid things completely. Guilt and things like that. Sorry. Just while you were asking that question, I remembered one more thing I want to leave you with. Is that when you make your 1 year plan, which I do recommend you do, please also add in there, what am I going to contribute to the Krishna consciousness movement? Okay? There's one thing looking at your development and how you want to progress in Krishna consciousness. But a very important thing to add is also, what's my contribution going to be to Prabhupada's movement? Prabhupada had all the things. He didn't need to make a 1 year plan. He had his life perfectly sorted, but still he left all that to go and share Krishna consciousness in the last years of his life. And it's so important that if you look at the list of acharyas, the list of acharyas in our parampara line, it's not that there's only 35 of them there. There's many more, many, many, many more. And it's not that they're any less devoted than the others. They were all pure devotees. But they're not mentioned. Why? Because the acharyas that I mentioned are those that have made a significant contribution to the upholding of the sampradaya. They've made such a contribution that without them, devotional service from planet would have been lost. They've done something there to sustain it. So I'm not saying that we should try to go on the list, but my point is that it's very, very important to... It's our debt to Prabhupada, and it's very, very important to see how much of a contribution can I make to the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay, you know, things are not right inside the movement. Okay, I know there's so many problems everywhere. I'm not saying that ISKCON is perfect. There are so many problems here. Okay? But let's not look at those problems. If you're fully engaged in giving and sharing Krishna consciousness, These problems will take care of themselves. Even if they don't, it's okay. Okay, there will always be problems. ISKCON's never going to be a movement that is free of problems. Okay, but let's not fight amongst ourselves trying to, you know, deal with these problems in there. Let's try and look outward. Let's see if we can assist Prabhupada in sharing Krishna consciousness with the rest of the world. One senior devotee in ISKCON, he once said, he goes, there's only one thing worse than being in ISKCON, and that's being outside of ISKCON. So let's please try and include that in your plan. What is your contribution going to be for the Krishna consciousness movement? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.